worth reading, considering that Mother's Day and Father's Day is around the corner. It is called The Ride of Our Lives, Roadside Lessons of an American Family. Here's what Tom Brokaw said about the author and the book. Quote, Mike Leonard is a national treasure, and his touching, hilarious, instructive account of a loving road trip with his parents and children should be required reading in every family. Mike Leonard is a feature correspondent for NBC News, and he joins me this morning to talk about the remarkable journey he took with his elderly parents in a rented RV traversing the American Southwest through to New England's coastline. They reminisce, argue, laugh, and love. It is a heartwarming book published by Ballantine Books and retails for $34.95. It also includes a DVD of the journey, which is a terrific bonus. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Mike Leonard. Good morning, Mr. Leonard.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks. So how did this road trip come about? Your parents were houseless, were they?
Well, they had a condo in California, Southern California, and had moved back to Phoenix where they lived earlier, 30 years earlier. And they got a rental home, sight unseen. A realtor said, yeah, you can walk anywhere, it's close. And when they got there, they couldn't walk anywhere. It was somewhat removed from the stores and places like that. My parents are real gregarious people, so I could feel they would call me up, and my dad said, geez, I made a mistake, and when you're 87, you don't have many chances to make other mistakes, and you can't get back from that. So I felt bad that they were stuck and kind of isolated, and I went to bed one night, and I had a dream of an RV, which is odd, because we're not RV people, we're not campers, and the dream involved picking them up and giving them one last lap around the country, sort of an adventure. My thinking, I think, at that time was mobility. That's probably why the RV came looming into my head. But I told my wife, and she said, it's a lousy idea because they're old. You've never been in an RV. We're not campers. But I said, well, I've got a second part of this dream. I want to take a second RV and bring my three oldest kids and three of my older kids and a daughter-in-law. And that meant sort of taking them away from their jobs, and we have a small video production company, and that meant no income for them. And so the whole idea didn't really make a lot of economic or practical sense, but I felt compelled to do it. And off we went a month and a half later, and we had to go in a hurry because my daughter, another daughter, was pregnant and due in early March, and we left in end of January. So we had to make this trip and make it happen fast, and then hopefully come back and be there for the birth of the baby. My wife stayed with my daughter, and so off we went. And, if we had time to plan it or think about it too much, maybe I would have thought of all the things that could go wrong and not go, but we just went.
And when was this? This was a couple of years ago now, was it?
Yeah, it was in, we left at the end of January 2004. What I did is I always take movies, have all my life, and so I took my home movie camera, a couple home movie cameras, and then the idea was to make this sort of family documentary. So we were videotaping all of this stuff, and my family's all used to that because we've done it all these years. And I knew it was a bigger story as we went along this journey, so I told the folks at the Today Show, where I work, NBC's Today Show, that I thought that this could be at least two or three or four stories, and so they agreed to put it on the air. And after that, I got an offer to write a book, because the book wasn't on my mind when I left. And since I transcribed all the video for the Today Show story, I had all this material, the quotes and the descriptions of the shots. And so, I wasn't taking notes along the way, but the video camera became the note taker. And so I had all the material in front of me, and because if I tried to write it, or make notes as we went along, it would have seemed very sort of forced and all the rest, so it became very natural for me.
Now, you talked about your parents being gregarious. They, in reading the book, they really do seem like characters. They seem fascinating. They're funny. They're infectious characters. How are Marge and Jack this morning?
Well, they're doing fine. They're old. My dad is 89. My mom is now 84. My dad got cancer. He had something. During the trip, he was complaining about his ear. He couldn't hear very well. It ended up being cancer behind his ear, and so they removed it, his left ear. And it was a difficult operation for a man his age. But he weathered it well, and he's exactly the same person, minus the ears. He's really very, very upbeat. He feels really, he's kind of amazed that all of this has happened, and I think part of his amazement is that, and he's a child of Irish immigrants, and they, you know, had a typical difficult life during the Depression, but they're good people. And he said to me the other day when he read it, because I just gave them a chance to read it right before it came out, and I didn't want them to be worried about what people would think about some of their outlandish behavior. And my dad was, he said he cried when he read it because now people will know his dad. And he, I think it, when he said that, he meant sort of everybody like his dad who work hard, try to make a good life, and then move on, and nobody really knows who they are. So it's kind of like a bow to all the people like that.
Now, you said that they were, I guess, 87 and 82 at the time of the trip.
Right.
Are road trips advisable for elderly people?
Well, my wife didn't think so. She said that, and I'm, you know, my wife is great, but she said that they're too old. I mean, what happens if they fall, and what about their pills and all the rest? But it was actually very, very good because, you know, there wasn't that rushing to an airport and checking into a hotel, and it was really comfortable. I was surprised. I thought we'd have problems sleeping and all the rest, but we all slept very, very well. The thing that makes it difficult, I think, is if you try to be too ambitious and you try to, you know, cover too much territory and drive too much every day. So there were a few days where we had to drive pretty good distances just to get out of the desert and stuff like that when we first started. But we tried to just make it like, 3 hours of driving a day, and then park some, you know, find a campground or find a small town and wander around, and if they were tired, they could sit, they could take a nap if they wanted. Excuse me, take a nap. But so it really wasn't difficult. I thought the difficult part was a couple times on the road we stayed in a hotel, maybe two nights of the 30, and that was more difficult because you're schlepping all the stuff into the hotel and back. But the RV travel, I thought, was really comfortable for people of that age.
And your kids are how old?
Well, now they're like 35. My son is 35. My daughter's 32. The daughter who had the baby, my daughter who came on the trip is 28, and my son is 22. But, you know, they were all 2 years younger when we took the trip. But all working. We had a little, you know, like I said, a family production company that makes commercials and things like that. So when they left, it meant shutting down the company, and you can't just open the company back up and expect business at the door. So they all pretty much went broke, but it was one of those situations. It was kind of like Field of Dreams, where I said, "Hey, I've got this idea," and they said, "Okay, let's go." And you know, that was the difficult part when we came back, because they had no money. And when I wrote the book, when I was asked to write the book, I sort of demurred. I thought, "Well, I don't know if I want to write a book. It's a lot of work, and I've never written a book before." But I did, and then there was a bidding war for it, and we got a good advance, and so we split the advance up, the first part of the advance, and gave it to the kids, so they got back to square one. So it worked out eventually, but it was, you know, it's one of those things where you don't really know why you're going, but it feels right to go, and it certainly feels right now because of all that has happened.
So with all these different generations on this trip, how did you all get along in terms of just in terms of listening to the same sort of music or eating food and I mean, you all seem to get along as a family pretty good.
Yeah.
But I mean, there must have been challenges.
There were, and in fact, I knew that going in, and that's one of the reasons my wife said it might be a bad idea, because of just being in those close quarters, and you know, my dad not wanting to hear, you know, so headbanging music. But what we did, we used humor a lot. In fact, a lot of times we did do that. My son would put some really hard rock stuff on just to jerk their chain, and it ended up being funny. And then my dad would be singing these really corny songs from the old days, and we'd just roll our eyebrows, you know, or roll our eyes. But it was like, in those situations, you can either be annoyed or you can laugh at it. And in a sense, it's kind of like the same with life. I mean, there are things that are going to annoy you, and you're gonna. You can also, you know, derail these conversations, because we all end up kind of going back to our favorite themes, and that's what annoys people when families get together. They, you know, all Uncle Ralph is coming over, and he always talks about the same old subject, and it's so boring. So, you know, I made sure I tried to, when my dad get on his rant about the rich getting richer and all that kind of stuff, I would change the subject, and I would ask him these really pointed questions about childhood, really small, detailed questions about what, you know, who lived in next door, and what did that man do for a living, soon these really interesting stories came out that he's never told us, because he would always fall back to the same, you know, script, and we're all guilty of that. So I think it takes a little work to derail the boring conversations, and it also takes a little bit of knowing that you're going to be annoyed, and you can either laugh at it or get annoyed by it, and we chose to laugh at it.
And they were comfortable with being videotaped, your mom and dad?
Yeah, because they've been used to it, because I've been doing so long. I got into TV late at the age of 30, and I got into TV by showing Super 8 movies that I'd been making in the early years of our marriage. And all the way through, I've videotaped not just events and birthdays and stuff like that, but, you know, my kids would be eating breakfast up on a Tuesday morning, and I'd just take a quick shot of it because it was just part of our life. So the camera has always been around, and then when my parents were there, they just accepted it. They didn't know. I didn't know either at the time that, it was going to be on the Today Show. But since they've always been videotaped, and usually it's just ended up, you know, being seen by us, they were very natural with it.
We're talking with Mike Leonard from NBC News and the author of a charming new book called The Ride of Our Lives, Roadside Lessons of an American Family, $34.95, published by Ballantine. There's a great story in the book about your mother's mother.
Right.
And first of all, it's about the wedding ring, but the other one that I thought was just heartbreaking was you carrying your grandmother up the stairs because she'd had too much to drink.
Right.
She'd lived with you for a while, and I guess, did your kids know these stories, or did they come out over this road trip?
You know, they didn't know that story, and when I was writing the book, when I was driving along, and my dad would be talking. My dad was my grandmother's greatest ally, even though it was my mother's mother, and usually that's a source of friction in families, mother-in-law and father-in-law and this kind of stuff. But my dad was really in her corner. So he was talking about her a lot, especially when we headed back towards the old stomping grounds in New Jersey. And so I started to reminisce about, just myself, about this woman. And I don't think I told that story. I told it in the book, but I think it was more just thinking about it as we went back. And what my mom's mom had a difficult husband, and that situation came out in the book too, because my mom had sort of hit us from the... as kids, protected us from the stories of his sort of cruelty. And my grandmother, who lived with us after her husband died, was really a nice woman. But I think because she had a tough life, at night every now and then when my mom and dad would leave, she'd have a glass or two of wine. She wasn't a heavy drinker, but it would just get to her and make her tipsy. And that one day she fell in the backyard, and I was all alone, and I was little, and I didn't know what to do, and had to pick her up and carry her up to the third floor to her bed, and on the way up there, she just said, I think she was embarrassed, or, you know, by this condition she was in, even though it was only one or two glasses of wine, but she said, I've had a tough life, and something to that effect, and that's really the only time I ever heard her say anything about it. But, you know, he was abusive to her, and he was cruel, and yet both my grandmother and my mother sort of held that back from the four boys as we grew up. And that's one of those revelations that I made that came to me on the journey, because my mom started talking about her dad in more detail, and I thought it was quite remarkable that she didn't use that as a crutch as we were growing up and saying, oh, you don't know how tough I had it, and you know, we had a happy childhood. So she buried that, and that's I think a pretty heroic thing, and I think that's also explains my mom's feistiness, you know, and she'll have a few drinks at the end of the day, and she'll swear every now and then, and she'll, you know, she's more of a fighter, and I think that was her way of surviving.
Now, there's an amazing story in the book about you wanted to propose to your wife,
right?
And you needed a wedding ring, or you'd saved up for a wedding ring, but she decided to give you hers.
Yeah, as I said before, since I got my job in TV by making home movies, this was 10 years earlier. I didn't get into TV till I was 30, and I had been making all through my 20s, but we didn't have any money, and so making home movies was a really kind of a stretch for our income, for our budget and stuff like that, just buying the film. But 10 years earlier, when I was working construction in the city of Chicago, the summer between my junior and senior year of college, and I was a hockey player in college, and I was going back for my last year, and I was saving up for a wedding ring, living in a YMCA, actually, because my parents had moved out west. And I had saved $1,000 by the end of the summer, and planned to buy my wife an engagement ring, my wife-to-be, that weekend. And I called my parents to tell them that I was going to ask Kathy to marry me, and my dad put my grandmother on, and my grandmother said, I want to give you my mother's ring. And she had been saving this ring for the first boy to get married, and of course I didn't know that because, you know, family of four boys, we don't talk about rings or anything. So, and my grandmother's mother was from Ireland, and her name was Bridget O'Halloran. She was another immigrant. And when my dad got back on the phone, I said, well, that's terrific, but how do I get the ring? It's Friday. And I have to get proposed, I have to propose the next day or two and then go back to school on Monday. And so my dad said, let me think of something. And the next day, he said, be aware there's a phone tomorrow, because I didn't have a phone at the YMCA. And he called me at my wife's house, my wife's parents' house, and he said, go to the airport. And what my dad had done is that he had taken this diamond ring from this, you know, long-dead Irish immigrant woman and brought it to the airport in Phoenix and waited at the departure lounge, which you can't do these days because of security, and waited for the first flight attendant to come by. And he said, excuse me, could you bring this ring to my son? And she was a stranger, and he handed the ring to her. And then when he called me, he said, she has brown hair. You know, he didn't even have her name. So, you know, the flight could have been delayed or canceled, and then who knows what would have happened because she didn't know his name. But the flight did arrive, and I was there waiting for it, and the flight attendant came up to me after everybody emptied out of the plane and said, you must be the boy. And I said, I think I am. And she took the ring out and gave it to me and gave me a hug and said, have a wonderful life, and walked away. And, you know, it was interesting because that ring came across with this woman from Ireland who trusted to have a good life in America. And then my dad trusted the stranger to bring it back across America to this kid waiting at an airport. And then, because I now had the ring and the $1,000, I left the airport and went out and bought a movie camera, which was the remarkable part because I hadn't been thinking about a movie camera. But the ring gave me the camera, and the camera gave me the job, and the job, you know, put me in this position to write the book. So this long-dead woman, this Bridget O'Halloran's gift, really has changed the course of my life.
Jesus, what a great story that is. Another thing that I want to ask, you're in Vancouver this morning, and from some distance from your own country, the United States. The book is subtitled Roadside Lessons of an American Family. What do you think this journey, this road trip that you took with your family says about America, if anything?
Well, you know, I don't think it says much about America. I think it says more about just people. You know, I think, first of all, when they said road, they you know, wanted that to be in the title, and I was a little bit uneasy about it because I don't want to think I don't want anybody to think that I'm, you know, standing on a soapbox trying to give out lessons. It's sort of, you know, who am I? I'm just a guy. I've got a good job, but I sort of found my job in a weird way. We're an average family. You know, I went to 5 years of high school, an extra year of high school because I wasn't a good student. But the lessons come from these stories and come from some experiences and come from people we meet along the way. I could have been traveling through British Columbia or you know, in Toronto or Canada or Australia or any place and run into regular people and shared stories, and it would have been the same thing. I think, you know, sometimes people wax poetic about you know, their country, the country they live in. But I think this is just a human story. And so when I heard about that thing, you know, Roadside Lessons of an American Family, we truly are an American family. But we're an American family that we're in America because my grandfather, when he was 19, got on a boat hoping for a better life and shipped off to this country that you know, promised it. But he could have easily have gone to Australia or to Canada, and it would have been Roadside Lessons of a Canadian family or an Australian family or an English family or whatever. But so I think it's you know, the best part of America is the best part of Canada, which are the common regular people. And I think that's, to me, is the strength of the book. It's just those little things in life that loom large.
Finally, I want to ask you, since we have you on, last question. I don't watch the Today Show because I'm usually watching I Miss. How are things there, and what's going on now that Katie's leaving? Are you guys going to weather this out?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I it's funny because I work for the Today Show, but I'm really isolated. I work out. I'm the only one at any of the networks who works out of his home, and I'm pretty. I want my freedom, and so I edit my own stories out of in the small town of Winnetka, Illinois, and then just send them in. So I don't. I try not to hobnob or to go into the office too much because then I lose my freedom. When I do go in the office, I was on the Today Show a week ago to promote the book. It was the first time that I had been in the office and in the studio in over a year. And I've gone over a year without talking to the bosses. So when I see Katie and Matt and Ann and Al and all those people, the hosts of the show, they always make a fuss because I'm never there. But I think that, you know, Katie, I've always liked Katie. Katie, you know, is a lightning rod sometimes because she's in the position she's in and people will, you know, write negative stories or positive stories. And she's always been nice to me and nice to my children when she met them at the Olympics and stuff like that. But I think that for her it was time to go. You know, she'd been there for so long and it's a new adventure. And I think that the show, if the content is strong, will continue. I think, though, all of television, our network and everybody else has to watch it because, you know, the tendency is to get too Hollywood and too glitzy and, you know, do all this stuff to attract a certain demographic. And good stuff sells. And I just hope that, you know, Meredith, the person who's taking over, and, you know, of course, Matt and the people who are there, continue to fight for more good stuff because I see all of television tilting sometimes and a little bit more of a, you know, not fluff, because I do what is considered fluff, which is just feature stories, but, you know, more of the kind of glitzy, gimmicky stuff. But that's all of television, not our network in particular. But I think maybe this is a chance to sort of, whenever you have a change, it's a chance to reevaluate yourself and not get lazy. So I think that'll end up being good. But I really like Katie and wish her well.
Well, Mike, thanks so much for joining us today, and continued safe and fun travels.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to talk with you.
The book is called The Ride of Our Lives, Roadside Lessons of an American Family. Do get this book. It's a wonderful read. It's funny and it's charming. Mike Leonard here at the commentary.ca. I'm Joseph Plenum.